This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. In case you can't tell, I'm a little rough. I was doing so good. Staying ahead of it. You know, my wife was sick. I was sleeping downstairs. Wearing a mask when I was upstairs. A breathing mask. Wearing a mask. I was doing so good. I don't know what happened. Stupid viruses. But yeah, so I caught it. And it started coming on Sunday. And so I'm working my way through it. I'm not going to declare victory over it. I seem to be getting better quicker than my poor wife has gotten better. It's really hit her hard. But she's climbing out of it as well. But, you know, it hasn't been too bad. Oh, yeah, this is going to be great. I've got water here in the car. Maybe I can just keep taking drinks of water and not just be coughing in your faces the whole time. I did start wearing a breathing mask into work, you know, just the like hospital masks, just to try to keep the stuff confined to me, not spread it to anybody else. These viruses, stinking viruses. Really fascinating thing, these viruses. It's just, wow, so fascinating. You know, if we could just round up all the viruses in the world and destroy them, we would be virus-free. Virus-free. Because they can't reproduce on their own. They need living cells to reproduce, period. So if you could just get them all nuked in one shot, ta-da, that would be the end of that. Now, of course, we'd still have bacteria to deal with and cancer and everything else. But bam, we could take care of this one shot if everybody would stop spreading it to others. Anyways, yeah, that's not going to happen. I got tickled. A friend of mine this week, I was sitting there with my little mask on. And he came by and he said, oh, you're not feeling well. I said, no. I said, I'm trying to keep this from spreading. I said, I caught this from my wife. He said, oh, you're blaming your wife, huh? I said, no, actually, we were actually in a meeting. There were a bunch of guys in the room. I said, no, actually, I'm blaming this one on the cesspool of disease. And he looked at me and said, what? I said, yeah, my wife got this. I got it from my wife. My wife got it from our granddaughter. Our granddaughter got it from the cesspool of disease. And he kind of looked at me. I said, that's preschool. Funny, because as soon as I said preschool, the other guys in the room all started nodding their heads. Yeah, preschool. We remember preschool. Oh, yeah. So there you go. In other news, everything's going good. Everything's going good on the book, on the new book. This is fun. There isn't a lot of time to really, you know, dig down in and just really savor the book at this point, because I'm just trying to get the basics in. So that means I've got a goal of 5,000 words a week. And if I can get 5,000 words a week pounded in, then that means I will have this book done in 24 weeks. No. 5,000 words a week. 70,000 words total. It's whatever that is. Looks like I'm shooting for about 25 chapters. So, you know, it's going to be... Oh, see, now I have to figure out what it is. 5,000 words a week would be 120... What did I say? 14 weeks. Okay. So 14 weeks, which would put me somewhere since I started the first week of January, would put me somewhere, you know, second week of April or so. Then obviously polishing for 2-3 weeks, and then working on a cover for a couple of weeks, getting everything laid out. So, you know, realistically, if I can do 5,000 words a week, which the advantage of the current book that I'm working on is that I already have an outline for it. I know where it's going. That puts me somewhere around June 1st, being ready to go to beta, which would be good because I could give my beta readers, you know, a month and then immediately start the next one. And my goal would be to have the second book in this series going to beta no later than October the 1st, so that I could give my beta readers a month and get it back from them before Thanksgiving. Because I used to, you know, just tell my beta readers, look, you've got a month. And I got, you know, much more consistent responses when I would tell them, you've got 2 months. Then it would be like, oh, I got time, I got time, oh, I got time, oh, it's here, you know. So, yeah, a little, little psychology there. I'm going back to, you have a month. So, anyways, humans, so fascinating. So, humanity is so interesting. It's just so interesting. But, so, it's good. It's good. I'm enjoying it. It's kind of fun to be writing an adult novel again, you know, and you can kind of be a little grittier, and you can have long, flowing sentences, and as opposed to short, and, you know, you got to kind of watch the topic matter. So I'm enjoying it. It's, these people are heroes, you know, they're heroes. I like them. Anyways, I came across an article. I thought, oh, that looks interesting. And I started reading it, and I just kind of scanned it. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's probably podcast material. So then I just sent myself a link. And when I do that, then I go into Google Chrome, bring it up, put it in a bookmark so that it's sitting there waiting for you. Yeah, sorry, buddy, that ain't going to happen right now. Guy was trying to turn left across heavy traffic, which always difficult. Anyway, so I brought up the bookmark last night, and I thought, oh, I'll look at this a little closer. And I started reading this article, and I was like, yep, that's good. Yep, that's good. Yep, that's good. This is a really, really good article. Score! Because, I mean, it is right down the line with a lot of stuff that I've thought, yep, for several years. And it's kind of fun to, you know, see it in print and then see extra justifications and extra techniques. And, yeah, it's good. So, anyways, the name of the article, I think it was on the CNN website, CNN maybe, was How to Stop Sweating the Small Stuff by Joanne Chen. And a lot of good stuff in this article and a good motivation to pay attention to the article. Now, well, I won't say that. I was... yeah, I won't say that. See, one of the problems of doing this podcast right now is that I'm a little tired and I'm a little sick, and so the flesh has a little more pull, and so it's a little easier to just let things slip out that, you know, probably don't need to slip out. So we're just going to set that aside and go on. Great article. She starts off by talking about the fact that there are two types of people in the world. And, of course, the old joke is there are two types of people in the world, those who say there are two types of people in the world and those who don't. but that's the way the article starts off. There are two types of people in the world. Said those who swoop up their accidentally dropped keys with no complaints and go along their merry way, and those who, more often than not, can't pick them out without cursing or letting out a big, miserable sigh. Now, we all know people of both types. people who are a little on a more even keel go along, something happens, they're like, hey, no problem. And then for other people, these little bumps in the road, it's like, wah, you know. I mean, some people, they said in the article, take life's small slights and setbacks with a shrug, while others freak out, blow up, and fly off the proverbial handle in a loud huff or with silent seething. Why such a yawning gap in behavior? This is a question that scientists have only realized, recently recognized as being significant to health. Ta-ta-ta-ta! Here's the justifications. Okay, so we know that when you have a really traumatic experience in life, that the body floods the bloodstream with stress hormones. We know that. And those are basically designed to gear you up to, you know, to fight or to fly away or to do the bad. I mean, we know that stress hormones have certain reactions inside the body. And if you are under a load of pressure all the time, that is not good for you long term to be living under those stress hormones. Well, when you have one of these little flare-ups, I can't believe they are. You know, maybe that only constitutes a 10 to 15% increase as you're reacting to these daily annoyances. But over time, that builds up. They're finding that out, that when they happen more frequently, they can have a cumulative effect. So they have concluded from that if we could all be more even-keeled, you know, don't sweat the small stuff, we could actually enhance our mental and physical health. Well, yes, I believe that. I very much believe that. I have believed that for many years, you know. You just stay calm, enjoy life, you know, be peaceful. Things will work out better. And what she said next in this article was something that I really liked. She said, you know, recent research suggests that we can train ourselves not to sweat the small stuff. Some people say, okay, if you want to be a more even-keeled person, try thinking like one first. That's good. Use mental strategies that exercise the region of the brain that's responsible for reasoning, that so that it isn't overwhelmed by the part of the brain that's involved in emoting. Now, okay, this is where I kind of diverge from this article a little bit, because what they're trying to do is find a way to say, listen to one part of your brain, but don't listen to the other. And of course, in my framework, I translate that instantly to listen to the spirit and not the flesh. Ta-da, done. But they don't want to use those types of terms. And so where they end up with is, listen to the rational brain, don't listen to the emotional part of the brain. But then they have to kind of qualify that later and say, well, but, you know, the emotional part of the brain kind of has two halves too. You know, there's good emotions and there's, you know, bad emotions. And so you want to be more rational, but then, you know, the obvious conclusion is, so I'm not supposed to experience good emotions, you know, helpful emotions, peaceful, joyous emotions, laughter. No, you can experience those things, but don't let your brain get trained into experiencing emotions. Well, see, that's not, for me, it's not rational versus emotional. It's self-centered, selfish, mine, versus being centered more with things of the spirit, which are love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, patience, goodness, kindness, all those things. And those things have emotional components to them. They have rational components to them. They have emotional components to them. But there is an attitude and an approach to life where it's not dog eat dog. What you're doing is trying to create an environment of free for yourself, environment of success for yourself and for the people around you. You're a team person. You play well with others, however you want to put it. But it's not just this simple rational versus emotion stuff. I mean, that's what the that's one of the directions that Star Trek went down with their iconic characters. You know, you had Kirk in the middle, who was kind of, in Star Trek, you had Kirk in the middle, who was kind of the divider between Spock, the purely rational, and McCoy, the purely emotional. And I don't think that's really the successful strategy to life, to just be purely rational. I think the successful strategy to life is kindness, love, generosity, all those things, in an environment of rationality. But anyways, okay, so we're going to diverge a little bit on that part, but, you know, just understand that when I'm reading and it's saying something about being involved in the reasoning center as opposed to the emotional center, I'm really reading that and saying being involved in the spirit center versus the flesh center. And then the rest of this all just falls in and it's really good. And they made a statement in here that these little setbacks that we experience, that they'll only ruin your day if you let them. And I thought, yeah, that's true. That's very good. So they actually started going through several different strategies, and I thought this was excellent because they set up these scenarios to say, okay, you're feeling this way, and then what can you do about it? Now, I've said this in other times on the podcast, the way I deal with this when I'm talking with people is I say, okay, for feelings, in order to deal with your feelings, I found the most successful strategy for me is to figure out what is the proposition of that feeling. What is the statement that's underneath that feeling? Like if I'm experiencing road rage because someone cut me off, he cut me off, you know, okay. Some of the things that are underneath that feeling are, he knew what he was doing. He saw me there. He cut me off. He intentionally is trying to make me mad. He's not driving well. He should get out of my way because this road belongs to me. All that stuff. All that stuff that's bound up in road rage. All those statements. Whereas if you can get to those and look at those and say, okay, are those really true? Then you can diffuse the feelings. What they're saying is when you feel these ways, here's some possible things that you can do. And that works too. I mean, it does work. So, for instance, you might be feeling inconvenienced, okay? So the situation is you put off your errands, you canceled your lunch date, also you could be home for when the cable guy shows up between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. and he never shows up. So they say how to stay calm, reframe the circumstances. So tell yourself, well, this gave me the opportunity to sit over a cup of coffee and just kind of enjoy the morning without having to be anywhere. That's an unexpected luxury. Yay! Or think of the big picture. You know, perhaps the cable guy had more assignments than he could humanly keep up with. They said, you know, this is not to say you should let it go. You should call, let the cable company know that you had arranged, you took off work, you cleared appointments to be there, and they didn't deliver. They said, but you can voice your displeasure in a less angry way and still get results. And I was saying, yep, that is true. And especially that second part. Because I always like to kind of spin it and look at from the perspective of the other person. I think I mentioned on the podcast that I had a situation where I was just trying to move my wife's and my daughter-in-law, my daughter's phone over to my cell phone plan with my son-in-law to get them all consolidated. I was told, oh yes, we can do this, no problem, no problem. It took 7 phone calls over a period of 2 months to get it worked out. By the time it was all said and done, Verizon had to give me a credit on my bill of $200 and some odd dollars because they had split us. They combined us, and we thought it was done, and then they'd split us off, and then it was a mess. It was a mess. But, you know, I'd call, and I'd talk to people, and I would say, okay, this is my 7th phone call. This is my 6th phone, you know, this is my 4th phone call on this. Oh, we're so sorry, sir, that you've had to call back so much. And the gal I was talking to the 6th time, she came back at one point. She said, look, she said, I've talked to my manager. And she said, I've told him, look, he's not shouting at me. He's not, you know, he's not yelling at me. He'd just like to get this resolved. I said, precisely. It really does work. And you got to understand, it's not their fault. You know, it's just I had an unlimited data plan from Altel I was trying to protect. And that just was not going to happen. Because the computer systems just weren't going to take it. Sometimes you got to know when to just say, okay, fold. Just put me on the plan you want me to be on. We're done. Anyways, so the next situation is, you know, okay, you've prepared your presentation. You've worked and worked and worked and hard for weeks. You get up and you just mess it up. You just forget your key points. You know, it's just terrible. And I thought this was very good. Focus on the present. Yay, I like that a lot. After all, quote, it's never about the stress-inducing event. It's never the stress-inducing event that you're freaking out about, says Stephen Berglass, PhD, a life coach in Los Angeles. It's what you're afraid might happen because of it, whether being reprimanded by your boss or laughed at by your colleagues. Absolutely, that is absolutely true. And there again, when... You know, when I tell people you need to focus down on the statements that are underneath those feelings. Why are you feeling so defeated? Because I messed up and, you know, my boss will think I'm an idiot and people will be making fun of me and blah, 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 blah. And if you focus down on those things, you get a chance to look at them. Then you have a chance to diffuse some of those things. And even more importantly is exactly what they say in the article. And that is, what can I do at this point? I can't go back and redo the presentation, you know, from 2 hours ago. Can't do it. It's in the past. It's past. What can I do? You can take control of the situation. You know, you can do some breathing and meditating exercises. Or one of the suggestions was, I thought it was a good suggestion, send out an email to people who are in the building, who are in the meeting, and say, look, I was not on my mark in that meeting, and I actually missed some really important points. Here's the things that I should have said, and I apologize. I thought I was very well prepared. I'm backing in my garage for this meeting, but obviously I let my nerves get to me. Here's what I wanted to say. Bing. Just open, honest with people. Give them an opportunity to be extraordinary. So that was good. I liked that a lot. Okay, so that was another situation. They were saying, you feel anxious. Your husband is running late, though he swore he would be on time. Okay, husbands. Now you're going to be late for your appointment, and your toddler just wiped your nose on your skirt. His nose on your skirt. How to stay calm. Problem solved. If even keeled people rarely appear stressed, it's because they are too busy looking for answers, which is absolutely right. Okay, this is what has happened now. We can spin around and figure out who to blame for this, or we can just pick up and go, move forward. You know, a tired spouse in a soiled skirt aren't catastrophes to be cursed, but circumstances to be fixed. Ask yourself immediately, how am I going to solve this? And he says, once you've phrased the question in your mind, you have awakened the reasoning portion of your brain and put yourself in a position to find an answer. Okay, so that's that reasoning thing again. He says, now pretend that you're a coach with a game plan. Okay, I'm going to pull on a clean skirt. I'm going to take my child with me. I'm going to text my husband that he can meet me at my appointment. That's good. You don't need to put on the internet, meet me at the appointment, you bum. Anyway, you feel disrespected. Somehow your offer to bring back coffee for an office mate has turned into an order for 6 complicated lattes. As you rattle off the list to the barista, you notice that she is rolling her eyes. Okay. Stay calm and speak positively. This is really good advice. Of course she's rolling her eyes. You got 6 complicated lattes. You just say, what I do in that situation is exactly what they suggest here. I look at her and go, yeah, I'm really sorry about this. It was only supposed to be one, and the next thing I knew, I got this list as long as my arm, and I apologize, but hopefully we'll get through this together. And I appreciate your help so much. You know, speak positively. We had a situation several years ago with a young lady who was staying with us. We wanted her to be able to stay with us as she was going to college to cut down on her costs. It was her first year, state college. And so I went in with her, and we were filling out the paperwork. And they said, oh, no, that's fine. If you know, you're welcome to stay with them and that kind of stuff. I'm filling out the paperwork, and I get to the place where, you know, I'm supposed to fill in what kind of relative I am. And, you know, they don't look at this paperwork. All I would have had to put down is, you know, dad or something. And that would have been the end of her uncle. You know, I just paused and I said, well, actually, she's not a blood relative, or I said something like that. And the lady looked up at me and said, well, she can't stay with you her first year. And the young lady was getting a little nervous. And instead of blowing up, I looked at the registration, or at the housing lady, who was right in the middle of the crush of all these freshmen. I mean, she, you know, coming in, it was not an ideal time to be bringing up with exceptions. And I just stopped at her and I said, ma'am, I said, this young lady doesn't get much support from her parents for college. I said, she has lived with us in the past when she was working on other programs. I said, so we're very good friends and we're acquainted. We're not relatives. But what we'd like to do is to assist her as she goes to college so that she doesn't come out of college with a number of high student loans. We'd like to see her pay for her college as we go. And as part of that, we're going to give her a place to stay. We're going to give her some food. How do we make this happen? What can I do to make this happen, so that she can go to college without incurring a lot of debt? And then you just stop and you just look at them, you know, very pleasantly. You just look at them and you make a very reasonable request, and then you just wait. And she said, well, there is a form you might be able to fill out. Okay, that's great. We will fill out forms. We will do whatever. And we filled out the forms. We filed them. They approved it. Ta-da, we're done. Pleasant. Be pleasant. Okay, disappointed. You've been planning this cocktail party for weeks. Now the big day is here and it's snowing heavily. How to stay calm. Embrace optimism. True. Behind every setback, there is an expectation that things should be different. Okay, even-keeled people are no different. But when things don't go as they plan, they feel hopeful that circumstances will get better. In other words, we look at that and say, oh, that didn't work out like I wanted. Well, let's see what will work out. Optimism buffers the effects of stress, not only for everyday hassles, but for life-altering challenges. There was a study in 2011, in which women who participated for 2 weeks in an imagery and writing exercise in which they imagined an optimal future, and they reported a sustained increase in optimism compared with those who wrote about random topics. In other words, you can influence yourself to be more optimistic. You can learn that and condition your brain to be the type of person. You can also learn how to be less explosive and less irritable by doing some of the techniques that they've talked about in here, and then by also trying to think bigger trying to think more expansively, trying to think more kindly and more generously and more lovingly, trying to think about the circumstances of the person that you're angry at, trying to include them and bless them. That's one of the, I've mentioned that in the past too, that sometimes, happened many years ago, this lady cut me off when I was trying to get into a parking space, and it was like the flesh just went about, you know, all the way into Walmart as I'm saying, well, she saw you there. She knew you were going to, you know, just kept on until I was driving home. And then I was like, okay, that's it. And then I just started blessing her in the car out loud. My Father, I don't know the woman that pulled into that parking place, but I just pray that you will bless her today. Looked like she was limping a little bit when she went into the store. You know, I'm glad she was able to get a parking lot that was a parking place that was closer to the door so she wouldn't have to limp so much. I don't know what's going on in her life, but I just pray that she will be successful in everything she puts her hand to do. And you do that for 2-3 minutes, and the flesh just gives up. It just goes, ah, and walks away. And then you get on with your life, and you say, you bring her up again, and I'll just keep blessing her, so it's not going to work. You know, towards the end, I highlighted this just because I thought it was, for a hothead type whose brain already seesaws towards the emotional side, negative events can exacerbate the imbalance. For an even-keeled personality, the brain may tip over to the emotional side only ever so slightly. No matter which group you fall into, just a small push towards the reasoning area of the brain can mean the difference between a run-in with a colleague that ruins your entire weekend or one that can leave the office or one you can leave at the office without a second thought. See, I just think that this dichotomy of just saying it's the emotional versus the rational brain, I just think that's just not quite right. Because one of the things that makes an even-keeled person an even-keeled person is not the fact that they are rigidly rational. It is the fact that they move through life with a sense of optimism and a sense of joy and a sense of happiness. And those are emotions. I think really what makes an even-keeled person an even-keeled person at the end of the day is that at some profound and fundamental level, they know everything's going to be okay. There is nothing to fear, that everything is going to be okay. Now, whether or not they put it in those terms or not, there is something within them, some way of approaching life that has given them that somewhat indefensible, unprovable thought basis for their life that everything's going to be okay. And I think you only get that by living more in the spirit than living in the flesh. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.